In fact, let me just throw this out there. I'm a know-nothing about OSHA regulations.
Yeah.
I am a rank amateur when it comes to OSHA regulations. In fact, continuing full disclosure, this job, this roof, was the first time in my life I've put on a safety harness.
First item I want to mention here, and there are some comments, people are figuring out, if you haven't already, that the videos are way behind our actual date. In other words, we filmed episode 52 in July. Mm-hmm. It's now December, so it's summertime and people are sweating and wearing hats. And I truly wish also that we could have put them out the next day or that weekend, but
yeah.
Man, you got to understand, it's just not, it just wasn't really possible at the time. And you can tell, but it was just kind of every day at the job, and the videos just kind of got stored until we get to them, which is now. So hopefully in time, for viewers in the future who are watching the series, I don't think that'll be an issue because they'll sit down and just kind of watch it in one sitting and it'll make a lot of sense. But for those of you who are watching it live, unfortunately, there's just kind of no way around that.
Yeah. So visualize the angst that Nate had to be feeling as he was filming what I was doing every day with my helper, and the house was moving forward slowly, inch by inch, and further, and he's running the camera all day, and then going home and storing the terabytes of digital information that just kept stacking up and stacking up, and knowing that he wasn't going to be able to get to those until who knows when, and then try to remember what he filmed and what was said and what the sequence was. And so that was a pressure cooker that he's now just having to sort of parse his way through. Now, 5 months later, 5 months after the fact, he's got to go back and open up those files and make the videos out of it. So it has been a real challenge. And I don't think either one of us realized that it was going to be so hard to get the videos out close to real time.
Yeah, I had a feeling, but you just never know how they're going to go. It's funny, these video files are a lot like any raw material where you gather them and then you have to store them. And even storing these files is kind of nerve-wracking and hard because I've had hard drives fail. And if that were to happen with one of these hard drives that has all of the August footage, for example, that would be devastating. And so backing up files and trying to keep the hard drives, even in some cases, not like in separate rooms, but I've had thoughts like, oh man, if somebody broke into my house and stole my computer and all those hard drives, that is stealing the entire Speckhouse series and its backup. And yeah, I could back it up online, but there's so many files and it's so big. I don't think my internet connection, if it ran around the clock, could keep up with what we were doing over the summer. I think every day I was filming between 60 and 80 gigabytes of video. Actually more than that, because it was two cameras, so a lot. And so anyways, it's just like any raw materials like lumber or steel that would rust or warp or get damaged over time. I've had the same experience with the video files where just storing them and then of course getting back in and trying to find them and remember them is kind of challenging. And then like materials, dusting them off and figuring out like, okay, what's going on? This one's, what's up with this thing? What was I thinking when I put this here or cut this way? And so that's the phase we're in right now, is kind of dusting off some of those folders and trying to remember what happened, at that moment.
So in the blacksmith shop, it's called shop rash.
Yeah.
Anything that you make that lays around the shop gets shop rash. It degrades.
Someone made a comment about a storage device called an NAS. I can't remember what it stands for. Network Access Storage. It's basically just like a massive hard drive. And I probably ought to look into that because right now I've got a dozen or more little external hard drives and I'm always plugging them in and replugging them in. But the point is, this is kind of what we're sorting out right at this point. And it will be nice once we've kind of chewed through all of them. And hopefully here in the spring after the holidays, we will be caught up, where a video will be filmed at the Speckhouse and then put up just within a few days, and we can really kind of all go through the experience together, which is really going to be just really great for us and hopefully for the viewers as well.
Yeah, so visualize that the episode 52 that we're talking about, bright, shiny July day, we've had a snowfall here, Okay, Thanksgiving here, we had snow on the roof of the house. And so we are working in a completely different world than you're seeing on the screen. And it's sort of, I don't know, it's energizing to look back and think, wow, those were beautiful mornings banging those floors together. And now it's a cold, damp, dark work environment. So it's just, it's a trying to recreate the feelings and the thoughts from back then in the summer is its own unanticipated challenge.
Let's get to the next point where we want to talk about some of the common questions or recurring items in the comments about episode 52. Primarily, this is going to be the insulation. One of the most frequent comments, or certainly most commented comments, was about the insulation being stuffed in those wall cavities on our first floor there. And I have a feeling we're going to get a lot of comments over the rest of the framing about insulation, because it's really mm-hmm. something people care about, apparently. Mm-hmm. So lots of comments about it being sloppy and stuffed in there. What's your opinion on that?
So first of all, they're right. Okay, it was just stuffed in there. And they're absolutely right. Take it to the bank, right? I'm left without excuse, right? That the vapor barrier should have been towards the climate-controlled side.
But so the vapor barrier meaning
is the paper.
The paper side of the insulation.
Yeah, the craft face or paper faced insulation is always installed towards the climate controlled side. Because, as I understand this, as the lower temperature air encounters the warmer surface, you have the possibility of condensation. And so the paper is there to try to isolate that and keep that from contact with the back of the sheetrock, for instance.
Yeah.
And it's a minimal amount, at least around here. So that's the thing to throw down so everyone understands it, is that we live in a very gentle climate here. Mm-hmm. I mean, think of Hawaii, where windows may or may not operate, where windows are optional. The trade winds are always blowing, and it's within, 15 degrees of being the same temperature all the time.
The windows in Hawaii are those louvered kind, where even when they're closed,
yeah.
there's like quarter-inch gaps every 3 inches all the way down. Like
right. Okay.
The air's coming in.
So we're not Hawaii. I mean, we go on vacation to Hawaii from Southern Oregon, but we are not Kanuckistan. I mean, we are not. I can't even tell you what the average temperature is here, but the average wind velocity is the lowest in the nation. It's a very... Oh, I can tell you this, that Southern Oregon and the Middle East are the two places on the planet, I've been told, where you can have a band of sheep and turn them loose, and they can, in nature, go out, and if a coyote doesn't kill them, the climate is gentle enough and the growing season is long enough that they can survive unaided, a domestic sheep.
Yeah, the Middle East?
In the Middle East, Jerusalem area. Oh. This is what I'm told. Now, so probably the people from New Zealand and who else will call BS on this, but I grew up thinking this anyway.
Yeah.
So the upshot of it is we're in a gentle climate. The average temperatures are not, there's not wide temperature fluctuations. And I pay only as much attention to energy efficiency as I must. And that is not, I'm not bragging. That's an admission. That's a confession. And so, yeah, those little rips of the insulation should have been cut just about a half an inch bigger than the opening, so they would have slid right in. The paper should have gone in towards a heated surface. But when you consider maybe 10 corners throughout the whole structure that are stuffed like that as a percentage of the total wall area, mm-hmm. And also consider that in those corners, they are insulated on each side of the corner. They have complete insulation in the adjoining cells.
Yeah.
So the actual contact with the interior heated surface is an inside corner.
Yeah.
So it's a small thing, and I'll plead guilty and say, well, you will be pleased when you see the insulation that is put in the walls.
I don't know. I don't think people will be, honestly, because it's one of those things that people really do care about. And another point. Stuffing insulation in wall cavities like that is different than hanging it between studs where you can staple it to hold it up.
Yeah.
And if you cut it in there a little too small, not that it's going to like slough and fall down, but it, you know, maybe. And maybe the whole thing sloughs down like 2 inches. It's like, okay, now you got a 2-inch gap at the top. I guess the bottom line is I'm certainly not worried about it.
No.
And, you know, you go in old homes, and especially when you're remodeling, and you go in an attic and the insulation has collapsed down to be like 2 inches. I had some property in Phoenix where it's really warm and the insulation matters. And these houses had literally maybe 2 inches of compressed insulation in the attics. I mean, this house is going to be just fine in terms of its general efficiency compared with, you know, what it needs to do in this climate.
But we do admit that your criticism of that process was well-founded, and we are left without excuse, and the house is going to be great, and we'll just press forward.
Some people in climates where the temperatures are extreme mm-hmm. really do need to pay attention to these things on a very close basis. And the framing itself can be done in a way to improve the efficiency of the home. So is there, and I think we had a couple comments about that, that this, even the framing itself, where the studs are going, is not sort of done with the efficiency in mind. Is that
That's the case?
And how would it be different if we were worried about that?
Yeah, so framing choices that we were making were never driven by energy efficiency, but if we lived somewhere else, they could have been. For instance, the corners that you saw stuff, if those would have been California corners, then the insulation can be continuous and can be put in later, controlled in the same way you control the rest, stuffing the rest of the insulation or blowing in the rest of the insulation. That's item one. If the headers were not all solid glue lams, which exceed the bearing requirement on most of the openings, if they would have been a boxed header, there would have been a void in between, say, two 2x12s that could have had, you know, a foam put in there, or a, polystyrene foam? Styrofoam is an older school way to accomplish that. But so a boxed header could have reduced thermal transmission through the headers. You can offset studs in a wall so that there is no thermal transfer from the outside to the inside, that there's a thermal break everywhere. And in severe climates, a wall on the outside, a wall on the inside, the cavity between the walls are stuffed. Matt Reisinger was talking about some sort of a stud now that comes from the manufacturer with a thermal break installed with some sort of insulation inside. Don't understand it. Don't need to understand it. What else? So wall thickness, offsetting studs, boxed headers, corners. We have, you will see in the roof system, made a framing choice very much driven by insulation and ventilation, in that the rafters are I-beams also, BCIs, and that even though the insulation that is spec'd is 12 inches, we've used a 14-inch rafter so that there's 2 inches of ventilation space above the insulation in the cavity between the rafters. So there's an instance where a thermal transfer and ventilation choice was absolutely reflected in the framing process. But I think that's about the only instance in the whole house where that was the driver.
Yeah, you can really see this in cold weather when you drive up a road and it's frosted and you see the frost on the roof where the roof rafters are, and then in between there's no frost. And it is kind of, I'm always kind of surprised at how much colder it is where those studs are. In other words, insulation really insulates, and studs really don't insulate. And I got to assume they do transfer some amount of that hot or cold air, right, kind of pass it through into the house. I don't think it would show up in the little corners we're dealing with, but I'm sure, you know, like we've said, I'm sure it could make a difference and add up to something in some places.
So I think what you're talking about there, where the truss is or the rafter is colder, and in between there is warmer, meaning that heat is getting out of the house and thawing the ice in between the trusses. That the ceiling is not well insulated, and so the attic is warm.
So it is actually colder where the...
It's colder. The wood up against the sheeting is insulating that strip.
That's right. Okay. I've always looked at it and kind of like scratched my head. Maybe that's why I'm making this point. I've always kind of looked at it and just figured...
Yeah.
But you're right. It actually, that the stud is insulating that.
The rafter, the truss is insulating that strip, and so it's staying colder longer. But when you blow a bunch of insulation into an old house, then the whole roof stays frosty.
I suspect that as this house build moves on, we'll get more comments like this from people paying attention to efficiency. And I suspect we'll get some comments about the air penetration or air sealing mindset, which is another, which is closely related of not letting the air itself squeeze its way in. And I don't think that's something, certainly nothing we've never talked a lot about. And I just saw some videos online of guys just going nuts, sealing their house and testing it for pressure. I mean, pressurizing the whole house. That's certainly a whole side of building a house that we're not really going to touch. So if that's something that might matter to you, you're going to need to kind of do your own homework there, because you're not going to get it from us.
Yeah. So Dave Taylor, that talked to us and schooled, gave me so much, downloaded so much information about this in Phoenix and has been in contact. He gave me one really good tip. And he understood that our climate is so different from his in New Mexico, that a lot of what was important down there is just not that important here. And the payback time would be so long here that it just, you know, when you just crunch the numbers, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
But I think one thing we will probably do that I had never thought of before, remember the sill seal, that roll of white stuff that we put down? He advocates putting that, stapling that to the framing in the top corners of the room before you put the drywall on, so that the drywall is capturing that sill seal in the corners, so that, because to reduce air infiltration in and out at the juncture between the drywall ceiling and the wall, because that's at the attic in a space that is not that well climate controlled, perhaps, and it's a juncture with the outside wall to reduce air transmission through that corner. That seems pretty easy to do.
Well, doesn't the tape and mud kind of seal that up?
Well, it can, but the angle tape is, anytime you're, if you're taping on a flat surface, it's flat taping. If you're angle taping, it's an outside corner or an inside corner. And the inside corner angle tape doesn't have as much mud on it as flat taping does. So when, right in the corner, you've pretty much just got paper and paint, which is not as impervious to air transfer as flat taping, where there's a recess at the edges of the sheets and you've got, you know, maybe an eighth of an inch of mud right on that seam itself. So that does not seem, that seems like something we could do for, you know, maybe $200, you know, to do that around the house, and it might be worthwhile, at least at the upstairs. You know, the downstairs, I don't know. We'll have to go over.
That's a good point. There's certainly some energy efficient items that can be done for very little. And at the top of that list would be installing the insulation correctly. In other words, what we didn't do. When you're doing it anyways and putting it in, do it right. And maybe I'm imagining, if I could go back in time, because I think I stuffed a lot of that in there. I know Lenny did, but I remember at some point I was just jamming it in there, thinking we're at least doing that. But anyways, stalling it correctly and lofting it up a little bit and fluffing it up. If nothing else, at least since what you are doing, do it right.
Yeah.
And that's going to be half the battle.
Yeah. And we're going to sub the insulation out.
Yeah.
Home insulation services, probably who we're going to end up using, because the energy codes in Oregon have just changed. And the only way to get the R value that is specified in a 2x6 wall now is with a particular type of cellulose blown in a particular way. So we're not going to get a whole bunch of fiberglass dust in our nose, which is fine.
All right, well, we'll talk more about this a lot, because once this insulation goes in, we will have more to say there and probably more comments and feedback. The next item in this episode that got some comments and feedback was about the safety rail, if you can call it a safety rail. At least that was the gist of some of the comments. I was kind of, I was not surprised, but there's certainly a lot of people looking at it the same way we were, where, hey, it's better than nothing. And that's certainly how we felt about it. Looking back, what's your thought about that safety railing and seeing some of those comments?
If I was building this again next week, I would do it exactly the same way. Through the course of the construction, and you know, you people need to know that right now, while we're sitting here in the first week of December, the roof is on it. The roof is built. And so all of these working at height safety choices have been made, and you're going to see all of them. But one thing that was consistent was, I kept Daniel off of the high work. I kept him off of there because I thought, you know, number one, he doesn't like it up off the ground. And number two, I thought, since I am not conversant with modern OSHA protocols and I have no desire to become conversant with modern OSHA protocols, sorry, you can criticize me and your criticism will be well-founded, but the fact is I'm not motivated by that. But I am motivated to keep Daniel healthy and happy and productive. And so we kept him in good places. And that railing around there, I was on those boys. Okay, we got the railing up this far. We're coming up the edge. You guys pay attention. Stay back. I'm not tying you off. And then I would go out and make the cuts. And I feel, in my heart of hearts, that we were responsible and no one even came close to getting hurt.
One item that I am grateful for about these comments is that people are posting them so that other viewers can read them and decide for themselves whether or not it's important to them and if they should go watch those OSHA safety videos and how applicable it is to their you know, their construction and their project, because without a doubt, it's not, this isn't going to surprise anybody, but it's not one of the areas where we consider ourselves experts.
Yeah. In fact, let me just throw this out there. I'm a know-nothing about OSHA regulations.
Yeah.
I am a rank amateur when it comes to OSHA regulations. In fact, continuing full disclosure, this job, this roof, was the first time in my life I've put on a safety harness. So understanding that I am an OSHA amateur, I am a repeller. That is, I take people repelling. I've been doing it since, how old were you when I took you that one time and scared the daylights out of you? Were you 9?
Yeah, or 10 or 11, somewhere in there.
Yeah. That's a story we'll tell sometime. But so I got turned on to repelling as a good thing to do with young people, and I've got the gear. I can take like a dozen kids repelling. And I've got static lines. I had a dynamic line, but it wore out quickly from the bungee action, you know, when people are rappelling down a hill. So got static lines and got harnesses. And I love to tie onto a rope and jump off a rock. I love it. But this house was the first time I've put on a safety harness and used it working up high. And I couldn't do it. I couldn't use it when I was sheeting the roof by myself because I didn't want Daniel up there. And I was sheeting it by myself and I could not have dealt with keeping the rope out of my way. But once the sheeting was on, there were a couple junctures that you'll see that as soon as I put that on, I thought, wow, this feels good. Okay, it felt good, and I used it, and I'll continue to use it, and I've always made sure that Daniel was tied off if he was up for any reason. But back to our railing, it worked great, and I would do it exactly the same way next time. You know what's interesting? Mike Rowe is one of very few people who can stand in front of a microphone and say, sometimes it's safety third. But I've listened to one of his TED Talks, and he had a particular example of when he was on a crabbing vessel in the Bering Sea off the coast of Alaska, which was made, you know, notorious on that television show, The Most Dangerous Catch or something.
Yeah.
I knew a young man, Steve Marlega, who worked on one of those, and he would tell me stories that would petrify me while we were working heavy construction, to think about the reality of of hanging out over the edge of this thing with a baseball bat, breaking buildup of saltwater ice off of the anchor chain and off of the bow of the boat because you're getting so heavy up there, you're listing, you don't want to capsize because of the ice. And then so Mike Rowe's talking about he's in a bad storm and like 50-foot seas, and he goes up to the captain, who was about 8 years his junior, and said, what about OSHA? I mean, we're out here on this deck and the waves are sweeping across here. And he said, how are you going to bring us home alive? And the captain, he said, turned to me and he said, son, and then Rowe said, I loved it that he called me son. He said, son, my job is not to bring you home alive. My job is to bring you home rich. Your job is to bring yourself home alive. So I don't agree with the captain. I don't agree that his job was not to bring the crew home alive, but was to bring them home safe. His responsibility encompassed both those things, right? I mean, he was wanting to stay alive too. But I do think carefully and take seriously my responsibility for the welfare of the people on my job. I've had visitors, a steady stream of visitors pulling up and getting out and wanting to visit. And I find myself hovering over these people as they walk through the job site and there's pieces of wood on the ground. And a lovely lady was visiting from California. We just had the most wonderful time. Kelly and I went out to dinner with her and her husband. She had arranged to bring him up for a birthday present. It was terrific. And coming down the stairs kind of late in the evening, a little bit dark, down those winders, she missed a step and she fell and she banged her head against a stud. And I thought, great, she's going to the ground, you know? Mm-hmm. And so safety is a thing. And when you're working, you're at risk, but you're never at as great a risk as when you abdicate your responsibility for your safety to someone else or to something else. Right then is the moment when you're going to get hurt.
Yeah. There's certainly a general mindset of safety that individuals should have, but that should exist on a job site. And I know there's job sites where the culture and the attitude is more rambunctious and rowdy and show-offy and careless. And I'm sure statistically, those are the job sites where accidents happen compared to job sites where people, even if the safety railing might not pass the exact code, where people are talking about it and thinking about it and paying attention to it, where I'm sure the risk of accidents decrease. So it's a responsibility that we all share, both for ourselves, our coworkers, our families, and unfortunately, there's just no way to remove the risk on any job site or anything. It's just kind of a part of all these things. So do what you got to do, which is kind of what that safety railing was for us. I did, there was one good comment, or not a good comment, but a good point. A guy said that they put the safety railing on before they raised the walls. Cool idea. Mm-hmm. We used wall jacks, so wouldn't probably have worked as smooth, although I guess we could have put some of it on. If you're listening into this sort of as we put them out, if you're really keeping up with it, you're in for a treat on our next video. We're going to be talking about the stairs, and this is probably the video that we've been the least excited about for lots of reasons that you'll see, but we just kind of put the finishing touches on it and are holding our breath, and let's just say you're not going to want to miss that one, which should be out here just the next day or two.
You will be vastly entertained.
As usual, the comments on YouTube are going to be the best bet for leaving feedback for this conversation. If you want to have specific questions for the episodes in the future, you might put those on the video itself of the episode, because when we are preparing for these, that's where we kind of scan for recurring questions. And if you put it there, that's going to put it the most likely spot for a discussion in the next Spec House podcast recap discussion. Any other items to review?
I don't think so. We'll just press forward. Christmas is coming.
Thanks, everybody. We'll catch you next time.